Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
It may be the preseason, but I'm still going to call it. I'm still going to say it's game week number one. Look, are the Chiefs right now in St. Joe game planning for the intricacies of the Chicago Bears? No, I mean, probably not. No, definitely not. But listen, we've been talking about guys in short. We've been talking about, think about this. Walk back in time with me, okay? Remember that AFC Championship game? Now forget about it. Don't think about it too hard. It happened. Super Bowl. Quiet. Offseason. The draft. We're watching college dudes running around in their underwear trying to figure out if they're going to be good at football or not. The draft itself. We're covering every angle of guys having their names read. Then there's a little bit of practice for just like a second. Then it goes away. Then shorts practice. Then it goes away. Then padded practices and training camp. Now we've made it to the Chiefs putting on their real game uniforms and lining up from a team also wearing their real game uniforms. If that's not a game, Nate Taylor, I don't know what is.
Yes. I mean, look, we've almost made it, guys. Again, you know, it reminds me of what I said last year, and obviously the warm reception we received from Miss Kay Adams. But look, man, it's that first cut of like steak. It's the first cut.
And that's even if it's like the first cut of like the cheapest steak money can buy.
Yes.
We've been vegan for like 6 months. We've been making it work with soybeans.
Exactly. Exactly. You haven't tasted steak. Sorry, Chiefs fans. Since they lost to the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC Championship game where they kind of collapsed. I mean, we can delete kind of from that sentence. But look, at that point, you couldn't have steak. And life can go on. Seafood, you should give it a try. It's amazing. Pasta. Oh, nothing quite satisfies you like pasta. Yeah, mix a salad in there. But there's a reason they say steak night. There's a reason, you know, there's a reason I can look at Seth. Seth can look at me and I can say steak night. And he knows the exact reference.
I'm gonna eat it right.
I mean, he knows the exact reference.
Special treat. It is the world's best meat.
I mean, this is why we're here. So look, it's not prime.
Right.
It ain't even Kansas City cut. Okay, no. Like, this hasn't even, there's no bones on this dog, but it is that first slice of meat. It is the Chicago Bears meat. I mean, it's awesome.
We might be getting a burger through the McDonald's drive-thru, but it's beef, and I'm gonna house it. Seth, hey, we were talking, right? Oh, do you want to defend the honor of a McDonald's burger? Sorry.
Now, you know, I thought to myself, what are you doing? So, no. But you know what? I still eat McDonald's. We all do. And you know what? I'm here. I'm here. Me and Jim Gaffigan are here to defend the honor of McDonald's because everyone still eats it. They make $100 gajillion a year. And everyone's like, oh, I don't eat that. You know what? It is like an addiction. People are ashamed to admit it, but I bet you've eaten McDonald's within the last 2 weeks. Every one of you listening to this, you probably have. Even if you live in Kansas City and you're within a 30-minute drive of a Joe's, you've still eaten McDonald's at some point instead. There's a McDonald's right down the street from the Leawood location of Joe's. And every time I drive by it, I'm like, how? Like, what? How? And I'm here defending McDonald's right now, but I'm like, how does that work? Like, how does anyone ever do that? But anyway, I don't mind McDonald's. I'll say it.
Oh,
it's really brave. I mean, I wasn't trying to bleep on McDonald's. It just felt like the cheapest beef I could think of. I think I've probably had McDonald's like once in the last 6 months, maybe, which is not me being snobby because the next sentence I'm about to say is that I've had Taco Bell twice this week.
Sure, that's fair.
So it's okay. Just, for me, it's a different drug. Now, it's a different drug. That's all.
Look, maybe the equivalent here is like McDonald's Just Right hash browns. That's like,
oh yeah,
that's like, you know, it's a nice scrimmage on a family weekend.
You crack that hash brown in half, the steam comes out. That's more than a scrimmage. If it's like room temp, it's a scrimmage. Okay. It's a scrimmage if it's just room temperature, maybe.
Okay. But, you know.
No, I'm defending McDonald's.
Exactly. The the beauty of this is how tender will this first slice of steak be? and I'm putting the entire onus on Isaiah Pacheco. Young man, if you can make this one slice of beef, it like extremely enjoyable, I will gladly shake your hand in St. Joe next week. Sure, there's like new receivers and like a couple new running backs, including Pacheco. I don't know how much Carlos Dunlap is gonna play, but like, you know, that's a little wrinkle, you know. Maybe the salt on this first steak is a little George Karloftis on you. So I don't know what we're going to get. Andy is usually like traditional in this manner. So you're going to probably see the rookies more than the experienced players. I just love the idea that for whatever reason, we're going to treat this thing like it's really important. And then with about 9 minutes left in the second quarter, we're all going to realize we've been bamboozled yet again by the start of the preseason.
Yeah.
That usually takes, like, it depends on how the first drive goes. Like, there's a lot here. So, I mean, there's a lot of comparisons you could make. I beat one to death when training camp started about being a starving man, getting his first bite to eat, or a dehydrated man going through the desert. I mean, and I beat that thing to death because I was like, what did I say? You know, some food is empty calories and some water is contaminated with bacteria, I think is what I wrote. I'm this isn't my best work. And it was one of those times right after I wrote, I was like, man, people are going to realize I'm a fraud. It was rough. But with preseason, it just depends how those first couple series goes. And I found that if those go well, or at least are fun, people tend to watch more of the game. And then it's usually by the time we get to like, when the second quarter begins, because Andy often does, it seems like the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Then you get to the second quarter and you make it through like one series where it's like, who? And that's me. And I know who a lot of these guys are. But you see the difference when you have, it's the lines really that mess with things. When you have the backup offensive line versus the backup defensive line, it's just chaos. And usually, and this is one of my favorite parts of preseason, the number two unit or number three unit on one team is way better than the number two or three unit on the other team.
You saying are you saying that might occur on Saturday, Seth?
And it might. Like, there's a chance, like, we don't know who Karloftis will be as a rookie. But let's say, I mean, he is really good. He's what the Chiefs want him to be. He'll probably still get snaps deep into the second and third quarter. And if he is who they think he is, that'll be kind of funny. And the problem for like Bears fans, they'll be like, well, how am I supposed to enjoy anything when it's like hot boom and again the play is over? And so that's kind of fun. I'm just excited for real football, because like training camp, like kind of like you said, training camp with pads, that's more real. Training camp in shorts, that's at least existing, right? Mm-hmm. OTAs, sure, why not? But this is actual football, actual live reps against people actually trying to win rather than just working on technique. And so you can start to learn something about guys you don't already know a lot about, or guys you have questions on. And I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
And I was telling you guys before we got started that I'm working right now, probably published for people who are listening to this, depending on what time you're listening, on like, you know, players that I'm interested in watching. And I ended up with, like, I was going to do five. I was like, no. And ended up being 10. And then I had like four honorable mentions. And so there's a lot that I'm interested in.
It's only a 90 man roster, man. How did you come up with 14 guys that you're like, I just can't wait.
Seth, are you Mike Borgonzi? What are we doing? Are you the assistant general manager?
Christian snaps. He's gotten some first team snaps at right tackle. There could be maybe a bit of a competition there, and even though they're probably just trying to do the swing tackle thing,
swing tackle, swing. Swing, hey, swing, hey, swing.
I just like, who do I leave off here? I mean, Juju, Moore, Brown, Pacheco, Clark, Karlaftis, Bolton, McDuffie. Don't make me laugh, Cook. I can't leave him off. I can't leave off. I can't leave off any of these guys.
If so Frank Clark so, does something so noteworthy in so this you're
Mike,
game.
You're Mike Bradway? That's who you are? No. That's your Mike okay. Bradway.
All right. Hear me out on the Frank Clark one. Because it's a good place to start, maybe, I guess. I don't know. Everything we've heard has been like the new Frank Clark.
Yeah, fair he's enough. Made out of adamantium now.
Yeah.
Well, so hold on. Everybody, I just want to let you know, for right now, Seth is basically Tim Terry, the director of player personnel.
Yeah, right now I am. Are you sure I'm not more like a PR guy right now? You know what it is. But no, he was the headliner or the first guy I wrote about when I was talking about training camp storylines and whether I think they're real or fantasy, which is totally a game we should play today. But whatever, you know, you guys make a choice. And I wrote the new Frank Clark.
I asked before the show if there's anything either of you wanted to talk about. And I got 30 seconds of silence. Then eventually Nate said, sounds good to me. So don't put that on me. I asked you.
Well, I don't really have a retort to that. So I'm just going to push through.
You just didn't think that I would remember or put out our dirty laundry.
Yeah,
times are fraying.
We're coming apart at the seams.
This
is Clyde Edwards-Alaire all over again.
Did you say it's Clyde Edwards-Alaire all over again? Because by the end of it, I was ultimately proven clearly right. Is that why it's the same?
So anyway, Frank Clark, the new Frank Clark, and ultimately, in some ways, Josh, you were right. In other more important ways, you were wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, with Frank Clark, it's this new Frank Clark. And I actually wrote for Real or Fantasy. I said I think it's a fantasy. Not because I don't believe that he means it, but just it's weird for a player to have three down years in a row and then suddenly recapture remotely what they used to be. Hmm. Especially guys that look like they weigh like 240 pounds soaking wet and are power-based edge rushers. And so I've got it down as a fantasy, and I'd love to be wrong. But here's the cool thing about Frank Clark. I would be stunned if he gets very many snaps, if like any. But if he does, it should be really apparent because the things that are supposedly different about him this year are very readily apparent things, right? The burst off the line, does he have any of his strength back from his kind of heyday, all that. So I do find that really interesting. It's like the shortest part, though, in the article. So I don't have a problem. You have a problem.
I just was surprised that he was on your list because I just don't expect to see a whole ton of them. But I do want to go through a couple of the other ones. I think there are some places where maybe we might be able to find some spots to either agree or disagree on your verdicts. But Nate, did you have anything you wanted to add on the Frank Clark front? I also want to at least touch on some of the news of this week. A few little moves that I want to get your take on too.
No, I think Seth has done a masterful job, and I don't want to cause any more harm to our listeners through our bickering.
That's a peacemaker right there. Well, then here are the few pieces of news from the last time we did a show. The Chiefs signed most recently USFL wide receiver Devin Great. Kind of a fun story. Don't know that he's necessarily sprinting up the depth chart. But then also shortly thereafter, they cut DeAndre Baker, a name we spent a lot of time talking about for quite a while. I'll give my very quick thought on him, which is that it just kind of bums me out because as far as we could tell, he was extorted and got cut and then got another chance and then broke his leg and then came back from that and then got cut during training camp again. Just, I don't know, that path makes me sad.
Can I say why it's not sad?
Sure.
At least for me and my perspective on this.
Is it the timing?
No. Although that certainly helps. Andy tries to do a good thing for players where he cuts them earlier than maybe you would anticipate so that they can hopefully catch on or get a feel for the rest of the landscape of the league earlier than usual to see if they can get on a spot elsewhere. So there is that, Josh. But for me, when he had that injury, I thought he was never, ever, ever going to play football again.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've told a couple of our peers probably more specifically Matt Derrick, who I love and have watched just about all these camp practices with, is it was about probably a week in the camp where I turned to Matt and I just said, hey, the fact that this man is walking on his own, everything after that is a bonus. Like it is. So it's not necessarily disappointing to me because I never thought the odds were in his favor from the moment he played well in that stupid regular season finale game where he needed to show something and he did. And then unfortunately in a game that was inconsequential, broke his leg in a place that I don't ever want to see that again, kids. Ever. Yeah. So the surgeon did a fantastic job, but I mean, I'm just happy he can walk and that it's not as, that it's not a more serious injury than it could have been based on how it occurred. And I remember Andy kind of being moved by it, just sort of like, it's just jarring because he sort of explained this, like these are the freakiest of the freak accidents that you can have in football. So yes, it's unfortunate, but I'm just happy that he's healthy as an individual. So that's why it's not necessarily super sad for me because it could have been much worse.
Yeah, no, that's a good point and good perspective. Also, he worked out with the Cardinals. The news of that broke just, about half an hour ago from when we were doing the show right now. So maybe that'll give him a chance.
Hey, dog, you got that playbook, cuz? Hey, cuz? hey, man. Hey, I heard you was with them boys down in St. Joe. They leave anything behind. You take any screenshots?
That's a really good point. That did not cross my mind.
That is a terrific point. Yeah. Wow.
Well, hey, you got any phone numbers? Can we bug somebody?
Let me rephrase this. DeAndre Baker worked out with the Cardinals. I hope they pay him if they're going to get information out of it. I hope he gets some money out of the interaction. Do.
Well, you know, I might have some, coach, but you know, money kind of tight right now.
Yeah.
So
I might have something. Am I on the roster right now?
I'm having a really hard time hearing what you're asking me, coach. My connection's not so good.
I mean, look, I saw some formations, some interesting personnel, coach. They was doing something to us on the defense. So
I would love to see DeAndre Baker responding via email in the form of a clickbait thing. It's like, they had Sky Moore lined up the backfield and you won't believe what happened next.
And then
to read more, please send a contract for the month of 2022.
All right, but I hope everybody understands that this is a joke, but kind of not. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. Cause yeah, I mean, look, Cliff knows what's up. They about to put it on us, and I need anything that can help us.
I this feels like an appropriate time to mention that I don't think I've ever gotten as much feedback on a bit we've done as the noise translator last week.
Oh, man.
There was a small number of people that did not enjoy the bit, which I also
sorry,
don't
guys.
Hear about all that often. Mostly people enjoyed the bit. I feel like if you didn't enjoy it the first time, listen to it a second time, and you'll either be angrier or you'll figure it out. But either way, it's I appreciate everybody who made a point to say that they enjoyed that bit, because I enjoyed that bit very much. Other piece of news, yesterday the Chiefs signed Danny Shelton, defensive tackle, former first-round pick, which is how you know Brett Veach was involved personally.
A Brett Veach special.
It really is. He played 3 years with the Browns, which is where he was drafted, spent a couple years in New England, then Detroit 2 years ago, the Giants last year. And if you're a former first-round pick who, you know, after 6 or 7 years in the league, you're signing on in August, that's probably a pretty good sign as to kind of where you're at. But Nate, is there anything else there that people ought to know? Who does this impact? And also, I just want to make out the point that Pro Football Reference does have his nickname listed as Feast Mode, and that concludes my analysis.
Feast Mode. Feast that mode. Is such a killer nickname.
It's really incredible.
Oh, I did not know that. That is my original reaction, kids.
good.
That's so shout out good. To Aaron Ladd for pointing that out.
Really are that natural.
Yeah. Like,
they're
oh my
just,
god,
they're clever. And everyone tries to force nicknames on everyone,
right?
And that kind of natural thing, like you could just picture someone's dad was visiting the locker room. and was like, ah, more like feast mode. And every player clapped. That's exactly what happened.
So look, we'll get a look at him pretty soon. You know, what's fascinating is that the Patriots probably got him on the right track. But also, you know, what does this say? And I think you asked us this in our text, Seth, but like, what does this say about the rest of the roster? And I think we're going to find out something pretty soon. Taylor Stallworth, who was sort of a, you know, under the radar, you could say, acquisition, kind of similar to Shelton, you know, a guy that has play, you know, he has experience, has a little bit of burst to him. He has not performed as well as I thought he would in camp, and now he's dealing with a knee contusion, was what we were told earlier this week. So I don't know if Stallworth is going to play on Saturday. Mm-hmm. That'll be something we'll follow up on Thursday, the last practice before the team goes to Chicago. I think Derek Nnadi has solidified his spot. Obviously, you know, that's your projected starter next to Chris Jones. I think Tershawn Wharton has had some great one-on-one reps and looks to be in phenomenal shape. Past that, which obviously involves Chris Jones, it's like, I will never say a bad thing about Colin Saunders. By the way, he had a birthday. Shout out to him. Still the athletic freak that I know him to be. It's just, hey, can you do it consistently for a full season? That remains to be seen. Past those four guys, unless I'm missing something, there's a reason why they've moved Mike Dana inside more than I anticipated in training camp. And I think that's because maybe they understand from a number standpoint, not what we had anticipated. So there's a chance if, you know, Shelton does well in the second or the third preseason game that he will, you know, maybe secure one of those last roster spots.
Okay. Well, then why don't we go ahead and talk about the game some, because there are guys that obviously, Nate, you've been watching every day and often guys that you're talking to. And then, Seth, you've touched on a whole bunch of the camp storylines that you are and aren't buying into. Of course, you can read all of Nate's work over on theathletic.com. That's the website. You've probably heard of it. And then for Seth, the Chief in the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com will be the spot. You can check out the storylines here that he's gone through. And then the incoming 47 guys he's most excited to watch on Saturday. It's going to have to come through in a couple emails if you're subscribed that way, but it will get to you. It'll just be a very large file. Let's start with Isaiah Pacheco. Let's start with Lil Poppy. Lil Poppy has demanded his respect, and the hype train is going chugga, chugga, chugga right along. Nate, I want you to tell me what you have seen, and more importantly, I think, what you have heard, and by heard, I mean from one particular assistant coach who's not the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, but might be kind of on that level. And then Seth, you just let me know if that is a if that's fantasy or real hype there on Pacheco.
Until proven otherwise, I'm just going to say it's real. Okay, this man is a star. He is a training camp legend. He really hasn't made any mistakes. And the thing that just blows my mind is a seventh round pick usually does not get just a ton of praise from Dave Tope. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I've come to really enjoy. And the thing, mm-hmm. and
sorry,
the thing,
sorry. Sorry.
And the thing, I just love the changing of the roles here.
Dave Tope, I haven't heard Dave Tope talk about any player this much, maybe ever. You have to see the video or be there in person, obviously. But Nate, can you just confirm that whenever he talks about Isaiah Pacheco, his heart, the pupils of his eyes turn into little hearts?
I mean, there's a grin. There's just a twinkle in his eye. Again, for right now, he is a training camp legend. So he's bigger than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, both with your eyes and on the roster sheet. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is listed on paper as 207 pounds. Isaiah Pacheco is 216. He's also projected to be faster than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So if he's bigger than Clyde Edwards-Helaire and he's faster than him,
he must have been a first round pick.
Chiefs believe they might have found something.
Woo!
So, look, we know Clyde's a good football player. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes. I saw the elbow. I saw the eyebrow raise. I saw your elbow go up. You're going to raise your hand. I know you want to argue with me.
Not me. I don't.
He's a good football player. Say it with me. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a good football player. Okay, now.
Did you whisper it, Seth? Were you afraid?
Oh, I'm sorry. I genuinely did not know that that was a participation moment for me.
This whole show's a participation moment.
So
that was a really good summary of one of the things that I do that drives you nuts. Nuts,
he doesn't.
This whole show is participation for you. There are no off moments when you're one of three. It's not like there's 17 of us. No, I'm sorry. No, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a good football player.
Thank you.
Also, just out of curiosity, what height do the Chiefs have him listed at?
Because it's look, Clyde, I see you out here.
Yeah.
5'7".
Is that what he's listed at, or that's what you're listing him at?
No, that's on paper.
Okay.
On the...
He is
5'7".
In a really good set of shoes, I could see it.
Why are you doing it to this man like that?
Man, look, I'm 5'9 on my best day. So, I mean,
now,
I used to think I was 5'10, then I found out I was 5'9. Either I've shrunk
or
I've been
wrong.
Yeah, you
kind of shrink over time. That's what they
easy,
tell you.
Easy, easy. Whoa. I'm sorry I wasn't paying attention.
You know, biologically, your body deteriorates in a shrink manner.
Well, let me just tell you, I've had the opposite problem.
When you stop getting your athletic peak.
I've been shrinking since I was 16.
When you're on the twilight of this year journey. Not the rise, the twilight.
Right. So, Pacheco.
Why are you a hater, Seth?
I jeepers. So, I just can't believe it until I see it. I'll believe it when I see it. I'll see it when I believe it.
Hey,
there you go.
Hey, he is a camp legend until proven otherwise.
Until proven otherwise. And that's, he's on my list. He made number 9 of players that I'm most interested in on Saturday because we're going to know pretty quickly. Because that's one thing about running back. Like, running back really is a position where, like, you see it or you don't. And his college film is good. It's not incredible. His offensive line was terrible. Sorry, guys, if any of you listened to me. Seems unlikely.
I was going to say something about the quarterback, but look. Did you see? I ain't even got to worry about that.
That's one problem. Like, I only watch pro stuff. I only break down pro film.
It's so hard. And
when I was watching receivers for the Know Your Draft Crew series, I was like, man, there's not like 30 good quarterbacks.
Dude, there's not even 10.
Nah, it's bad. Like,
at least last year. Now there are years in the past where it's like, oh, there's some pretty competent guys. You can see guys on a certain trajectory to being really good. Dog, last year was rough.
No, last year was rough. And like you see it with receivers. And that's when people talk about like college stats. It's like, look, man, that dude is a way better quarterback than I am, for sure.
Yes.
But not by as much
as you'd like.
Yeah, not by as much as he should be. You know what? Before I talk about this, I have a call coming in from my wife. I got to step away. I'm sorry, guys.
That's okay. I'll talk about Pacheco because here's the thing. Seth just said he has him at number 9 on his like excited to see him list.
Yes.
I think he's number 1 for me. I could probably build an argument for a couple other guys here or there. But really, I like this ability for partially what Seth just said. We're going to actually be able to gauge him in a preseason game more so than we will for like Sky Moore, because we're not going to see how the Chiefs actually want to use Sky Moore.
Probably.
But I bet we're going to see Isaiah Pacheco take a handoff and return a kick.
Right.
And I want to see what he looks like with the ball in his hands at the NFL level.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just say for realistic purposes, for purposes of like weeks 1 through 5,
mm-hmm.
The person I'm most interested to watch is actually Juju Smith-Schuster.
Sure.
The most consistent receiver so far into training camp, which is slightly different from the offseason program, which was Marquez Valdez-Scantlin. I hope all of this audio stays in.
What Nate and I just realized, this is the magic of podcasting, what we just realized is that Seth didn't, like, mute his mic or his Zoom. He just kept it going. So he might have, maybe he muted in his recording, or maybe not. Maybe Kent is going to have a bad time going through and silencing a bunch of audio. I don't know, but we can hear it.
Can you mute your recording?
Well, you could definitely mute your Zoom for sure. That one I know.
That I could do. Oh, I'm sorry.
Keep it
all. That's okay.
It's okay.
That's okay. There was just a little bit of background noise, but Nate pointed it out, and I hope. Are things good at the house? Are we okay?
No, things are good. I'm actually at the office. My kids called me from the Alexa to let me know that my wife wanted me to know that she lost her phone. So,
technology at its finest.
Just chaos, man. Like, this is, I just, when the robot overlords come for us, it's gonna be through Alexa. We all know it.
Night night.
And that's my kids will be like, Alexa, are you listening to everything we say? And Alexa will be like, privacy is very important to the, and I'm like, yeah, but you heard that, didn't you?
Sure.
Anyway,
to be clear, man, I don't think the Alexa was your problem there. I think it was your kids.
Yeah, that's probably fair as well. Do you guys want me to pick up? I was going to say something about Isaiah
Pacheco. No. We were talking about Pacheco while you were gone. We're good. We're all excellent. And we already talked about Frank Clark some. So right. Nate, why don't you give me, like, you mentioned Juju. I don't know if you want to talk about him anymore. My Juju hype is going to be reserved for Arizona, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't want to believe anything that we see in the preseason as reflective of what the team is going to look like in the regular season. But you, like you said, you've been seeing him, like, be the standout guy in camp, and that's noteworthy.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's ways that they can utilize him in the preseason that'll give you an idea, but it won't be exactly, obviously, what you see week one. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that we can take from last year's preseason stretch is that we kind of realized pretty quickly in the Arizona game, that was week two, I believe, that the Chiefs were going to have a pretty good offensive line. Mm. And that proved to be, you know, a fact. So if I'm thinking in terms of that, I may say, hey, if Juju is open running alongside Kelsey, this can also be transferable in September in a number of different ways. Mm. On the defensive side of the ball, you know, I want to see how the Chiefs use Willie Gay, and it may be very vanilla, but it's kind of to Seth's point about, like, traits and just seeing it physically in a game-like scenario, because I'm pretty sure what I'm going to get out of Nick Bolton. I think the straw in this drink could be Willie Gay, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely.
So how they use him will be fascinating. You're going to see a lot of Trent McDuffie, and, you know, I mean, they have five rookies in the secondary. So my assumption is you'll see a lot of those guys play a lot of snaps, because Spagnuolo basically told us, very bluntly, I want to see these guys sneak at a very fast pace in a game-like setting, so that we can take all that information and sort of prepare them for September as well. So there's things to, like, you know, get a feel for. But the way Andy makes this work is you should really be setting your calendars for the Washington, I don't know what they call it, in week two of the preseason. Can I write that in the Athletic, the Washington?
Yeah.
I don't know what they call it, which is a lot of hyphens.
The Washington such and such is.
I think I'm going to end up unironically calling them the Washington football team from here on out, just because
just
that one
fun.
I know works.
It's just so fun.
With that not being their official name, they are still the football team in Washington.
True.
So I think they're just the Washington football team forever.
The Washington, I don't even know what they're doing these days.
Well, the Commanders is such a generic name. Like, I get what they're like, okay, we had a name that was among many, many other problematic things.
Last time we went with a racial slur. What about this time? Just something everybody's going to forget immediately.
What is
cool,
something,
great work.
Yeah. It's kind of like they went the opposite route. Like, they went with, like, the Glendale human beings. Like,
yeah. You know, they're just like
great references in this episode.
Yeah, well, yeah, there are. Like, this is very, very pop culture-y. A little old pop culture-y, but pop culture-y. So they seem to go that route. There's definitely not a ton you can take from like the results of preseason games, the team overall. One of my favorite things about preseason, though, is the vanilla stuff means that there's not as much schematic advantage or disadvantage as normal. Yeah. And what that means is like O-line versus D-line, one-on-one. You are just, hey, we're not running a bunch of stunts. They might run some stunts, some blitzes, some stuff, depending on the team. But it's like, you see that dude in front of you there, George Karlaftis? That is their right tackle or their left tackle. It looks like a passing down. Go beat that man and get a sack. And he can either do it or he can't. One-on-one. And that's, there's value in that. You know, same with receivers. You're going to probably see some pretty vanilla zone stuff, if much. But you're also going to see a lot of man because teams want to know, hey, can you play man coverage? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what defensive coordinator said. It might have even been Saban, actually, who commented, like, eventually every corner has to be able to play man. Like, no matter how slick you are, and I mean, this is the guy that, you know, basically created pattern match stuff, which I'm sure some coach will correct me on. But, I mean, you need to know if they can play man, which means you get to see receivers against man. And sooner or later, as a wide receiver, when push comes to shove, can you beat one-on-one coverage? Because that's where the Chiefs struggled, right? Last year, everyone knows, blah, 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 too high, Hill, Kelsey, halo coverage, etc. And no one else could consistently beat man coverage. Do they have someone who can do that? These are things that you can see in preseason. And so I'm excited for that stuff. That's the reason, like, all the guys that I'm excited to watch are guys, there's, like, a particular trait that I'm curious if they can demonstrate it against another professional team, even if that team is the Bears.
Another professional asterisk team. Like that, yeah, absolutely.
The Washington Average Joes. Scratch that. The Washington Joes.
The Washington Joes. Oh, what a missed opportunity.
That one's good. I like that.
The Washington Dudes. No, Joes is better.
Yeah, it really is.
By the way, color scheme kind of fits, fellas.
It is an incredible missed opportunity. Seth, you also wrote about Marquez Valdez-Scantling a little bit in this piece. And Nate, because you mentioned Juju kind of stepping out in front as the guy here, I'm interested in what you have and I guess haven't seen from Valdez-Scantling. And then Seth, why you are where you're at right now on particularly the element of it that you wrote about.
Valdez-Scantling could be a little cleaner in some routes, a little crisper, and has a tendency to drop the deep ball. That has been sort of a storyline in the second half as to where we are now in camp. Juju has mostly just caught everything. I wonder if I can, I don't know. I'm doing this for you guys. But what my hope is sometime next week is I can get some time with Juju and I can ask him how much of watching Travis Kelce run routes is instructional for him within this offense, because they're not the same type, but they're pretty close. And I just think the more I've seen it, the more reliable I'm starting to see what the Chiefs projected in the offseason in free agency when they signed Juju, to where it's like, oh, this can be, there can be something here. And as long as he stays healthy, I guess from a fan's perspective, like, I would be less worried about Juju in terms of stability, productivity, understanding the system fairly quickly, and being available for the quarterback in a way that is just, hey, professional wide receiver, commendable work. For Valdez-Scantling, like, it appears to me that they're going to get this man open. It's just a matter of some of the things he had in Green Bay, which is, you know, can he track the ball well? And can he be prepared for like the speed of which it's coming? I still think there are times where Mahomes just like lets it go. And any of us would be like, wow, that thing in the air. Oh my God. And then the ball just kind of like sails by you. Or you don't get like, you don't grab it the way that they would teach you or the way that they would hope that you would do it on a repeatable basis. These are slight slippage stuff. I wouldn't say it's like anything glaring. You know, these are things that like McCole had to learn like pretty quickly in his first training camp. So I, you know, from having this experience, I can tend to understand it. But my hope is that they'll do a lot of quick stuff in the preseason. This is my guess. They'll do a lot of quick stuff. They won't show anything elaborate or deep, but like quick stuff, timing stuff, things where you're seeing what the quarterback's seeing and you connect immediately. And then get off the field. Mm-hmm. And then get off. Stay healthy.
It's worth noting that Soldier Field is kind of a dumpster fire. And that's not great. Like, that's not where you want Patrick Mahomes running around a bunch. You know, there's a lot at stake there. With MVS, just for what it's worth, his drop rate has fluctuated throughout his career. Generally speaking, it's been fine.
Yeah.
His drop rate in 2018 was 6.8%, 2019, 5.4%, 2020, 11.1%. You're like, whoa. And then 2021, it was zero. So yep. Overall, it's been not great, but not terrible. And I think, but I do think he's a guy because there was some talk in OTAs and early in camp.
Oh, he was incredible in OTAs.
And then the pads came on, and he is not a guy. He accelerates in a straight line well. And he's got a great top speed and he tracks the ball solidly. That's what makes him a really good deep threat. But that change of direction stuff that has hindered him his whole career, that becomes much more important when the pads come on and someone's hindering you in and out of your breaks. That's just every year this happens. And he is the type of player that's going to benefit from practices with a little less contact. And so I really do think the contract they gave him makes sense for a guy that they're like, we need a legitimate deep threat. He's a legitimate deep threat, but this talk of him being more than what he really was in Green Bay, I'd be surprised by that.
Okay. Let's get out of the receiver room then. Also, Nate, you might have a little extra to give us on this front because coming soon to The Athletic. We mentioned the rookie defensive backs a little bit. I don't know. I mean, to the idea earlier that you guys pointed out of, hey, whenever you're out here in the preseason, there's no extra dressing. It's just the vanilla, hey, this guy versus this guy. Maybe guys like Trent McDuffie and Brian Cook and certainly Joshua Williams, who is at Fayetteville State. I don't know if we've ever mentioned that on the show. But I'm super interested, Nate, in what you have seen from those guys, because I feel like just by the, maybe it's the nature of being the team's first pick and the position he plays, but I haven't heard a lot about Trent McDuffie. I've had other people tell me they haven't heard much about Trent McDuffie and asking why they haven't heard more about Trent McDuffie. And then Williams working in, Cook working in, and I know you got something coming soon to The Athletic that specifically covers those first two DBs.
Yeah, so I think the thing that has been really interesting to watch is that early in camp, similar to what Seth says, MVS was working, instructing. How about that? He was instructing Trent McDuffie on some things. And then for whatever reason, they were getting lined up a lot. And it was a matchup that I just really appreciated because, you know, MVS has the length that and the height that Trent McDuffie doesn't have. So he's going to have to get adjusted to that because, I mean, all these receivers are basically freaks in the NFL. The cool thing about Brian Cook is that he is Dan Sorensen right now. And the hope is that he will be better than what Dan Sorensen was last year. But that's his role. He's the third safety. I've seen him in dime, seen him in a little bit of nickel. You know, sometimes they rotate him in with the ones just so we can get an understanding of what that two safety look is supposed to be. The cool thing about Brian Cook is that you're going to get a more real version of him, because the thing that I know Seth loved so well in college is when he hit you, you fell down. Like you stopped moving. Well, I think safeties are the weird position in an Andy Reid training camp where, like, they really, you know, you're not really supposed to tackle guys to the ground. You know, there are some 9-on-7 run periods where it gets a little, you know, you can hear some of that pop. But for the safeties, it's like, hey, just, you know, get your run fits, get your assignments, get your angles right, you know. But he'll get to actually tackle someone in a real football game on Saturday. And so I think there's an element of physicality along with closing speed and just versatility from a younger body that could maybe help this team in a way that is, you know, that I think Steve Spagnuolo is starting to appreciate. There are more details about Brian Cook that you will read more in The Athletic. I'll just leave it there. With Trent McDuffie, he a starter. You ain't got to worry about him. He has some inside-outside flexibility. My assumption, my prediction, my projection is that he will probably stay on the outside and let L'Jarius Sneed handle the responsibilities of whether he's outside or inside, depending upon the matchups and who they're playing from a week-to-week standpoint. It's nice for him to have, but it'll be a little easier, I think, to transition McDuffie that way. Rashad Fenton, by the way, practiced for the first time on Tuesday in pads. So if everything goes right with him, he will be the opposite outside corner. So in a, you know, this is part of the story, but before they ever played their first preseason game this year, Steve Spagnuolo does know the way his safeties and the secondary, how it's really supposed to look. You got your three cornerbacks in McDuffie, Sneed, and Fenton. And then you have your three safeties with obviously Juan Thornhill, Justin Reed, and Brian Cook.
Seth, you've written also about the just general wave of rookies defensively. We've talked about Karlaftis already. What about the DBs?
If it were any other team relying on good defensive back play early,
from their
would say...
This is from their rookies. Like, I just could, I feel like I could tell where you're going. I'm sorry. I'll just be
from,
over here.
From rookie defensive backs.
Yeah.
I would say that's a really, 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 really bad idea and almost incredibly unlikely to happen. Yeah. Like, you want, like, one rookie in your secondary at a time because playing safety and corner is really hard at the NFL level. And corner in particular, safety is one where you can get by. So maybe two rookies, right? But they really are, they might have three rookies in the rotation that feature very heavily.
Correct. Yeah, Joshua Williams is, in my opinion, cornerback four at this point.
And that's great. I mean, great size, excellent excellent athleticism. I think Watson, people shouldn't sleep on him. He's not nearly as athletic, but he really has like kind of a Sean Smith to him, and like, yeah, but you can't run around me, buddy. Like he utilizes his length really well. Plays very physical, way better film than I expected for a seventh rounder. But the one thing that I keep coming back to in terms of early contributors in the secondary is that this GM and defensive coordinator combo.
And Dave Merritt.
You know what? Yeah, don't sleep on Dave Merritt for sure. They have repeatedly gotten early contributions. Even before, honestly, before Spags, and I mean, they've gotten repeat because Juan Thornhill did really well his first season in. Mm-hmm. Well, that was 19, right?
Yep.
19, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you see multiple guys, you know, like Ward. At cornerback, everyone knows about Ward and Fenton and Sneed and Bashaud Breeland playing well here. He kind of played well everywhere, but playing probably his best football here. They got really good play out of Kendall Fuller. That is kind of obvious, but you get these guys that come in young and play well. Maybe not spectacularly, but well. And it seems like they're able to do it with multiple guys. And this is a really talented group. So I think they should be able to, they can count on it more than a normal team would. It still makes me super nervous. Like the number of rookies, when I think about the fact that you've got three guys in the defensive backfield that are going to see a ton of snaps, one of them being a starting corner, because corners get picked on if they're an issue. There's nowhere to hide if you're a bad corner. Like, is you just, they go to the well again and again and again. But they're also, you know, maybe relying heavily on a guy to play Sam linebacker, unless Elijah Lee wins it out. They're relying on Karlaftis. They really rely on a lot of rookies, and it makes me nervous because you almost never hit at that rate, if that makes sense.
This is now the third sort of modern sitcom reference of this episode, but I did just sort of hear you say, No, it never does. I mean, these people somehow delude themselves into thinking it might, but but it might work for us. That is what I sort of heard there, but I also buy it. Like I don't know, man. I like this group to the point that maybe I just have my own hearts for eyes because the Chiefs have, you know, they attacked the position this offseason. And it just makes me so happy that I desperately want it to immediately be rewarded. I don't know, but I, yeah. I don't know. I'm not that nervous about it.
They made up for like 4 years of drafting no corners, yeah. basically. And like, you know what we got to do this year? We got to draft all the corners. Like, you know, what round is it? I don't care. How many have we drafted? Like three. Let's draft another one. I almost tried a Spags accent there and I bailed at the last second because there's no way I can do a Spags accent.
Well, it sounded like you were tempting Nate and I don't think either of us are taking the bait right now. It's gotta come naturally for me. I can't just, you know, it's not like it just lives in here all the time.
By the way, one of my favorite moments of camp is when Spags looked us dead in the eye and was like, "Yesterday was a real practice." And you know what day that practice was, kids?
Abs.
It was when we were indoors in pads and nobody could see it.
Yep.
And then I brought it to you via my noise modulations.
This is a question I should probably ask you off the air. And so honestly, Nate, if the answer to this question is yes, please just make another noise. But anybody ever talk to you about that? Did we get out clean on that one?
I think we could.
Okay, all right. I was really nervous that I was gonna get a
Now it's interesting that sometimes you catch people in the right time, in the right frame of mind. And you put out something knowing that the depth chart that is currently unofficial is not indeed the depth chart.
Are you?
And what I'm saying is on Sunday, I told y'all who was and was not doing well at camp. And then they brought one of these people to the podium on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And this man needs to have the preseason of all preseasons on this roster. So sometimes the unofficial depth chart is official, but other times you just want to get that out there before they tell you the lies that they're going to tell you.
Now, listen, I actually, because of the new showtime, I have not actually been to camp since arrival day, and I certainly wasn't present for any closed-door practices. But, Seth, I do want to go ahead and point, completely independently of anything Nate just said, I do want to point out that Josh Gordon is, like, wide receiver 8 or something on the unofficial depth chart, maybe 9, I suppose. But he did talk to the media on Monday, and I'm just going to say, from my perspective, listening to him, it sounded sort of like maybe a farewell presser, just based off of the context clues. I would like for you want to talk about feeling bad for a player that had their prime cut short. Josh Gordon was one of the most electric things in football, catching passes from Jason Campbell and Brian Hoyer. Like, this man deserved to be put in the Hall of Fame for that year alone.
We really do need like an incredible season wing in Canton, and
he is
first
that.
Ballot.
Woo, okay. Hold on. All right, stop the show. We don't need to talk about Josh Gordon anymore. Hold on. Stop the show.
Look. I've done it multiple times in camp where I go to a little website called Pro Football Reference and I look up the 2013 Cleveland Browns.
Are you doing Peyton Hillis right now?
What this man was doing amongst his teammates is virtually Jerry Rice-like.
No, it might be better. It might be the most incredible single season performance from a wide receiver in NFL history. And I listen, like, please, before anyone goes, oh, but Jason Campbell started 8 games, lost 7 of them. Brandon Whedon started 5 games, 0-5, and then Brian Hoyer, the only quarterback to win multiple games as the starting quarterback for the Browns that year, he went 3-0, and this man Josh Gordon was the most electric thing in football to the tune of 1,646 yards in 14 games.
14!
An average yards per reception number of 18.9.
That's
catching passes from Brian Hoyer, Brandon Whedon, and Jason Campbell.
He was a yak god.
Just unbelievable. Unreal.
Unreal. So, AP, like, all pro, like, pro bowler, obviously. Look, guys, he put up AFL numbers in a 14-game NFL season.
I think that having a single season wing of Canton, like we have to build out the rules. It's the best idea you've ever had. It's the best idea that's ever been said on this show. Because and they can't all be Tom Brady seasons.
He's already in. Right.
This
you exist.
This is honorable mentions. Once you're inducted, you can't be. Yes, hit me. This is how we're gonna get Jamal Charles in Canton. Also, I think I don't know what year it's gonna be. I'll figure it out.
There's Jamal Charles belongs in Canton. But anyway, I would love to go with the person that I want to say, but I can't because I just realized that in 2005, Sean Alexander, who is not going to go to the Hall of Fame, had 1,800 rushing yards and 27 touchdowns.
Oh, my God!
27 touchdowns! LaDainian Tomlinson, who's probably going to the Hall
of Fame. Who is a Hall of Famer, yes.
So that doesn't count. But like, so Priest in 03, 1,400 yards rushing, 27 touchdowns. And I was going to say that one, but then I was like, no, I have to say Sean Alexander's. He almost had, it's basically 1,900 and then 27 touchdowns. That's
Jamal Charles was just under 2,000 yards from scrimmage in 2013 in 15 games, 1980. Your total yardage number, 19 total touchdowns also.
Yeah.
He was the offense. Like, by the way, like this is
take context into account. 2013.
He was the offense. Which offense? The offense. Like, hey coach, who we 25? Got it. Like, hey coach, what you see some adjustments? F them adjustments. Where's 25?
There's got to be something we can do about it. You know, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Okay, here's a good one. Charlie Hennigan. Had
hit me
1,700 receiving yards and 12 touchdowns, and that sounds great. In 1961,
this is what I'm talking about. Is that an AFL player?
Holy cow, we'd have to be in 1961. That's unbelievable. Do you know what they were allowed to do to wide receivers? Probably got stabbed on some of those routes.
Yes.
That is legitimately unbelievable.
Look, how did the mafia not get to this man? How did the mafia not get to this man?
This would be like the equivalent, like, if someone in today's NFL were lining up and they said, hey, hang on before you start. They're like, what? And they threw my 11-year-old son on his back and then handed him a puppy and said, keep both of them safe while you run your route. And he's like, go! And he snapped the ball. The level of difficulty was so much higher.
By the way, the passes were not precise as they are now, too. That's the beauty of it. My man was getting real yards. Tough, hand in the dirt yards.
These are real yards. All right, I'm just going to see one more. I'm just going to see if there is
I've got one that I would like to submit here. We've talked about the game I'm thinking about, I believe, multiple times before. But let me check. The touchdown numbers are not. Let's see. You have to pick between 2007 and 2009. Or if it's not specific to a year, if we're going just like short-term Hall of Famers or whatever, cool dude Hall of Famers. I would like Josh Cribbs to be a first ballot inductee.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, Dante Hall also needs to be.
Yes,
in here,
Dante
just to
Hall.
Be clear.
Yeah, right.
Like
obviously,
that one seems
obviously.
Like a shoe in for a Chiefs podcast. But I would like to start featuring the Josh greatest kick Cribbs. Returners ever. Oh. Get Josh Cribbs and Dante Hall in the same class.
Oh, that's such a good. I've got one more shout out to my fellow people from Minnesota. When you go through the people that have had the most passing touchdowns in a season, you've got. A bunch of, well, for one, you've got Patrick Mahomes in the top two, which is hilarious.
I know where you headed.
So you see Tom Brady, you see Dan Marino, you see Rodgers, Breeze, Mahomes. You even see some Russ Wilson. Like, these are future Hall of Famers. And then just boom, out of nowhere, Dante Culpepper, 2004.
Baby. Yeah,
4,700
baby.
Yards, 39 touches. And let me tell you, as someone who lived in Minnesota, the fever pitch of excitement around this man And let me just say, he threw the prettiest deep ball that you have ever seen. And that was an all-time season. And I know what you're going to say. Seth, wasn't he throwing to? No, don't bother me with who he was throwing to. I'm aware. I'm aware. There was some. This is like, who was that QB? I think it was from Clemson, who was like throwing to like Sammy Watkins and DeAndre Hopkins at the same time. It's like, yeah, but still. So that's
Hey, Nate Burleson got 1,000 yards that season. Come on now.
Yeah,
come
on. Hey, Burleson could play.
Of course. That's my point. They had a squad that somehow inexplicably went 8-8. Houseway.
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 I guess we every time.
Houseway is one of the funniest. What is it with us in pop culture today? You ain't got the answer, Sway.
Have you guys seen where that interview got put over the beat for the song from the new Kendrick album that's just the couple fighting?
Oh, no, I have not seen this.
I will send that to you right now. Oh, Seth, you're going to have to listen to the new Kendrick album first if you just will do that for me. There are some adult themes. I will warn you, there are some adult themes in that album, but it's really good.
Is this that rap music that I've been hearing?
Yeah, it's that hip hop.
And just on a I want to hear that. You know, you said somehow, like in terms of going 8-8.
Yes.
I just have to remind people, like Chiefs fans, this is a perspective thing because there's some Chiefs fans that are kind of.
Mike Tice was working miracles as a coach.
He was. But let me just say, Chiefs fans, I love you guys. You will never compete with Vikings fans, especially now, because in 1998, they went 15-1. And they had one of the best offenses the world had ever seen. They had a top six defense. They had simultaneously, let me just make sure I get this right. They had Randy Moss, Chris Carter, and Jake Reed as their three receivers. Those guys could play. They had Robert Smith as the running back. And remember, their kicker who hadn't missed a field goal all year. Missed. And man, if there's any Vikings, man, if my dad's still, he's so supportive. Dad, I'm so sorry. Because he's still to this day, like, he can't even talk about it. He's like, it's just the most unbelievable thing. And it wasn't even a hard kick. And it was just like, how? So, Chiefs fans, it could be worse. And also, Randall Cunningham that year threw for like 3,700 yards. Now, again, that one's a little more like, I know I couldn't live behind an offensive line. Like, I couldn't take a single snap in a pro game. But I feel like if we took out the caveat that I would die, I think I could throw for 2,000 yards throwing to Randy Moss, Chris Carter, and Jake Reed. Like, it's just like, hey, Randy, I'm going to throw this as far as I can. So, like, 20 yards. And you're going
like
to catch
shooting
it.
Clay pigeons. Like, pull. You just yell, pull.
I'm just right in the middle of the field. Yeah, but they're going to have all their defense just cluster over there. Yep.
Yeah,
but Randy or Chris will bring it down.
it's so funny. I mean, look, this is. I hope people like these journeys because this is what I do. This is what we do for a living. I just look up stats and I say, okay, by the way, I know that you got to go through your reads. I know you understand the offense just as much as Patrick. Chad, we need you to feed Josh Gordon on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Chad, yeah. I need you to feed the ball to Josh Gordon. Let's see it. Let's see it. One, like, I don't know if Josh is going to make the roster. As of right
let's
now.
Let's get this man a job in Chicago right now.
Yeah, it doesn't look promising. But Chad, we know your spot's secure.
You know what?
QB3 and 4 are just... Now look, maybe it's a little different when the lights come on. Okay, I'm gonna give you that, fellas. When the lights come on, I hope to see something much different than what I've seen earlier in camp. But nobody has better job security than Chad Henne.
Chad Henne could show up to work naked,
drunk.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, he could show up drunk and get this job.
And Andy Reid would just be like, "Hey, Chad, why don't you sit these next few plays out and put some shorts on, buddy?" Because
this is exactly This is exactly the reason why we putting it on you, Chad. Because I cannot expect Shane Bouchel to get the ball to Josh Gordon consistently in a gotta have it preseason game. Okay, I'm putting it on you, Chad. Like, this is based on what I've seen in camp. Like, this is, you know, this is just the reality of where we at. So look, Corey Coleman can run them routes. Okay, who the new guy? Like, he can run them routes.
Devin Gray.
Write his name. Like, you played in the USFL. Like, congratulations on being here. Make it work. If Chad Henne cannot make it work for Josh Gordon, then we will always have to just quick tab 2013 Cleveland Browns pro football reference. That's where we are.
We are also like already just several minutes later than we should be. And there is one absolute elephant in the room, or actually elephant living in Seth's house, as far as I can tell. That Seth, do you have 2 minutes to hear the funniest part of this from my perspective and also bring the listeners up to speed? Or is this the intro next week?
No, it's absolutely fine. My wife doesn't have a phone, so I can always tell her I tried calling.
You should call her now and then just hang up immediately, so when she finds it later, it's like, oh, Miss Call, I tried, honey. I tried.
She's too smart for that.
Yeah, that's true.
I did text her. But no, yes, it's been a joyous week in the Kaiser household.
So I'll just give my perspective on this and you can fill in all the gaps. But there's the tweet that you put out that's, well, we did a thing. Any blue healer experts out there? And it is your beautiful daughter and beautiful puppy. It is a adorable picture.
Yep.
It is as cute as it could possibly be. And so I saw that. I was like, hell yeah, they got a dog. This puppy looks adorable. All these kids are going to be so happy. How many kids do you have now? 12, 13? Is it still,
give
are you
or
still
take.
Picking more? Okay, doesn't matter. And then I scrolled through the comments because I'm not familiar with blue healers personally. I mentioned this to Renee. She knew where this ended up going. But then she went through the mentions, and here is what absolutely ruled to me. I'm just going to read a bunch of uninterrupted portions of these tweets. I hope you have a big yard. You need to give them tons of exercise or they get anxious and insane.
Oh.
Can confirm, very active breed. They shed a lot during the summer. Hide everything in the backyard you don't want chewed up. And inside. Train with lots and lots of play. High energy dogs. They need time to run. Keep it active or it will get destructive. Kong toys. Keep them busy. Idle time is the devil's playpen. You're about to get skinny chasing it. Seth, did you know what you had done? Because as I read those, I was laughing out loud to nobody. I was in a room by myself cackling, just imagining you also scrolling through the replies and your face just getting more and more sunken with each passing tweet.
I knew that it was one of those Australian Shepherd type dogs. And so I knew that this is like,
this
it's
is
a
your
good
life.
Thing we've got five kids.
Yeah.
Because, like, what we're doing right now, especially during the summer, it's all right, cool. You're going to go outside with the puppy now for a while and run around with her. Hey, Isabel, now you're going to go outside with the puppy. And as she gets bigger, you know, it'll be the bigger kids taking her on walks and stuff. But there are other things here. There's like, no fence is too high. Like, it's just like.
Because they're genetically bred to outlast sheep.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, hey, we have to be better than sheep in every possible way. Okay, we'll bleep them up.
Yep. It's a lot. And so here's the good news. And I actually thought I would tell you this. Man, my daughter's beautiful. I'm just looking at this picture. She's also part, just a small part, but part Great Pyrenees.
Mm.
And if you're not familiar with Great Pyrenees, they are basically a Tyrannosaurus Rex with hair.
Yeah, what?
They are huge. And so
what do you mean part Great Pyrenees? These dogs are polar bears.
I know, they're enormous, and that makes me think a whole bunch of things that I don't really want to think about in terms of dog breeding, so I just try not to occupy my mind with such things.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that with us though. Appreciate it. Now every single person in our audience is also
my wife
about
won't stop talking about. She's like, how do you think? I don't want to talk about it. Oof. And so now if I have to suffer, you have to suffer. Because Jazz won't
what
leave
a
me
great
alone.
Theory behind a podcast.
So if I have to suffer, you have to suffer is a killer name for a podcast. I'd listen to that. Unbelievable. Anyway, here's the thing though. They're a very chill dog. So I've got two options here as I see it. I'm either going to have a blue heeler sized dog with a great Pyrenees temperament.
Or
I'm basically going to have a living velociraptor in my house.
Oh my goodness.
Like I am going to like
hey Godspeed. Godspeed, good sir. See, tune in next time to see if Seth is still alive.
Yep. Just like and so we just, and if any dog lovers are listening in our little word, I love dogs. Grew up with dogs, and we will do absolutely everything to be really great and responsible dog owners. And we do have several backup plans, people that live on farms and stuff, if it doesn't work out. And not like not
a farm
like,
upstate.
Not that kind of farm. I remember I do live in upstate.
Kids,
Minnesota.
The kids will go inside and the dog will go to the farm upstate.
We do have and when we live on 7 acres, we've got a lot of room to run. Although the problem is the one township road right by our house, the neighbor across the street has a bunch of cows. And I mentioned to someone who owns a blue heeler, and they're like, dude, I don't know how you're gonna walk that dog by those cows. Cause it is going to say, you know what those cows need? They need to be grouped into a tiny circle. Why is no one grouping these cows? Why is no one doing it? I'll do it. I'll save them. And that's going to be amazing.
I just hope you develop a good relationship with your neighbor very soon because they're about to have a much smaller collection of cows. Not fewer cows, just smaller space.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible. Okay, well, that's the end of the show. I needed to keep us updated. Please, Seth, please, if there's anything, any note whatsoever where you do begin experiencing great regret or great exhaustion, anything that would just be funny, would make me laugh like your pain, please just write that down so you don't forget to tell us about it. Gotcha. And in the meantime, maybe we get a film review eventually if the routes are crisp. You can check those out at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Seth's going to do some breakdown of the dog. Oh, what's the dog's name, by the way?
Ooh, good question. Kiko.
What is it?
Kiko.
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 That is Japanese for hope. My middle sister's name is Yukiko. I'm a quarter Japanese, and so we went with Kiko, and then we found out that Kiko means hope. And so basically, in trying to avoid naming my dog after my sister, I named my dog after my sister.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Because I was about to ask a follow-up question about your sister, Hope, but that's not... Her name is just Hope.
Yes.
Yeah, well, her name is Hope Yukiko Kaiser. Okay. Which, man, I'm just doxing my sister online. And her last name isn't Kaiser. She's been married for a decade.
That's fine. But now don't say her actual new last name and she'll be harder to dox. So I think you did the right thing there.
Yeah.
So you did name... You sort of doubly named your dog after your sister. I bet she loves that.
She thought it was on purpose, and fortunately, there's literally no way she listens to this show. So.
Well, that's good. Also, you could just tell her that your whole family was a really big fan of the linebacker from a few years back, Kiko Alonso.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that one, I hope he has nothing, like, horribly problematic in his Wikipedia page or whatever, because I'm not going to make it there to look in time before the show's over. So anyway, we'll see Kiko versus the all 22 of the cows. 22 cows, one dog. Who wins? That'll be in the newsletter soon. And then Nate's piece on the corners on the rookies, Trip McDuffie and Brian Cook. That'll be out maybe by the time you're actually hearing this. You can follow all of us on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan, at by Nate Taylor, at JB Briscoe. And then Nate, I'll give you the final word. I don't know if it's dog advice, Chiefs advice, it's up to you.
Just enjoy it, guys. It's okay. Like... You don't have to watch every snap on Saturday. Just enjoy it for what it is, guys. If you watch every snap, hey, more credit to you. But you don't have to. You know, we'll inform you. It's just the start. So it's a Saturday. Weather looks nice where we are. Might be even better where you is. It's totally okay. We'll get that to you. And look, until proven otherwise, remember, Isaiah Pacheco is a camp legend. Until proven otherwise, and I don't think think it's going to happen Saturday. So we'll get that to you, as always. But you don't got to watch all these snaps. We know. You know.